I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go aboard.
Happy Friday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the three-hour deflector shield shindig. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Chicago to Shreveport, Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. We are on the air.
Because they listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. We are now into day five of the Mothership Matinee. We're feeling good and doing well.
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
However, the set is still in shambles if you're watching on the web stream. In fact, my backdrop just fell down. So I'm just going to take a quick minute here to reset.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I mean, am I not a full-bodied, all-access sports radio host? Bilotti has worked with a lot of divas in this industry before. Bilotti, how often have you ever seen a host actually build his own set, especially when it falls down in the middle of a segment?
It's the first time ever.
It's the first time ever. You see that? Plus, we've got the Friday Shades going on. This feels really comfortable. This feels really good. So you can watch us, watchda.com. We've got a good show coming up for you. After last night's epic LeBron performance, Brian Windhorst is going to join us. He's obviously followed LeBron for a very long time, dating back to their Akron days. He's going to join us coming up here in about 35 minutes from now to reflect on what happened last night. Total implosion by the Pacers, a total implosion of the heart. And then also for the Cavaliers, one of those wins where you say, oh, okay, I guess there might be some greatness in there as well. Also, later on in the show, more NFL draft coverage. Kevin King could be a first-round cornerback in the NFL draft. Now less than a week away, he'll drop on by in the final hour. Corner out of Washington. We've got more NFL scheduling news. Do people get into this? Am I the only one that is completely bored by the schedule release? And the triumphant return of a very special segment we hear on the DA show coined during our overnight days. It has gone away for the last couple of years while we were shifting into the other time slot, but today it makes a return, and I feel like it's a game changer. I don't know. It's just me, but I feel like it's a game changer. I will explain in detail coming up here. But first, let's start with last night in Indianapolis, where the Pacers build a 25-point lead, cruising right along, bingo bango, no problem, game three, Cavaliers are lost, Cavs can't hit the broadside of a barn, look completely lethargic, Pacers know they need it. Got to get that first one at home, put a little bit of pressure on the Cavaliers. 2-1 feels a lot different than down 3-0. And then the Pacers decide to gag on the biggest piece of meat possible. And there is LeBron taking advantage of all of it as Kevin Love and Kyrie are on the bench. says something about where we are with LeBron's history and resume and legacy right now. It's where we begin at your cold open.
LeBron wants it back. He gets it. He's in the left corner. He squares up on Thaddeus Young. He'll launch a three. He knocks it down. LeBron James has 39 points, six triples. Turner launches a three. He missed it off the back iron. LeBron grabs another rebound, and LeBron works into the forecourt, and the comeback is complete. The Cavaliers shock the Indiana Pacers, trailing by 25 at the half, and roar back to claim game three.
We got the lead down, I think, to 10, and they took it back up to 20 again. And we never lost our composure. You know, we stayed with the game plan. You know, LeBron willed us in. You know, he willed us home.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was Cavs radio on the call and Ty Lue following the game. I look like my dad with his reading glasses as I try to read with these Kanye West plastic shades on my face. Gotta like tilt my head up, look underneath them. They're a disaster. They're so dopey. But anyway, LeBron has a triple-double and does most, if not all, of his damage in the second half. And the Cavaliers come all the way back to seize a 3-0 series lead. And here's why we are at a very interesting point in LeBron's life, his career, and why we should all step aside and take a breath and recognize what we're watching. We are now at the point where LeBron, who goes for 41, 13, and 12 last night and caps off a 25-point comeback, largest comeback ever in a playoff game, which is ironic considering, remember, the Cavaliers blew the biggest fourth quarter lead ever at the end of the regular season against the Hawks when they led by 26 on that Sunday. But this is interesting because we are now in a time LeBron has accomplished enough. He's still great at the top of his game that now doing historic things like this seem probable, if not expected. And that's just a totally different stratosphere. And I think if you're old enough, you remember Michael in this stratosphere in 96 and 97 and even 98. By 98, you can kind of feel like things are coming to an end. But in 96, after he comes back from baseball, 97, obviously, they go back to back. There are moments in the playoffs. There are moments in the finals where you are just expecting, okay, here's where the greatest of all time takes over. Here's where the greatest of all time flips the series. Here's where the greatest of all time does exactly what he wants to do to completely seize control of the moment and the postseason and win a championship. LeBron's now in that kind of conversation. There are very few guys we have ever watched in basketball where you just go, well, the impossible is just expected. Like what happened last night with LeBron, we would not expect from anybody else in the entire league. And that includes James Harden, that includes Russell Westbrook, that includes Steph Curry, that includes Kawhi Leonard. LeBron has now the aura and has done it enough. There's enough fundamental fact there and experience where you go, here's where LeBron does the impossible. Now, I'm not saying I called that when they're down 25 points. I'm just saying last night kind of just feels like a LeBron game, doesn't it? It just feels like a LeBron game. And yet, a LeBron game has never happened before. Just think of it this way. You're watching Michael Jordan in 1996. That's what we're watching. Now, who knows if he caps this off with another championship? But if you were lucky enough to watch Jordan when he was still on the Bulls, I would even say this is better. This is more impressive than maybe Magic and Bird when they're in 85 or 86 or 87 at the peak of their powers. Because even at that point in time, I don't know if you're saying these guys are doing the impossible, but maybe you did. If you were able to watch Wilt back in 1968, if you're able to watch the very, very best at their height and expect that they will do it, expect that they will make history and do it in incredibly difficult situations, That's what we are watching with LeBron. And one day, 20 years from now, the kids that are 10 and 11 and 12 years old, hell, it'll be less than that 10 years from now, we'll talk about LeBron in these moments the way we talk about Michael, because he was the last guy to do it like this. LeBron's going to be their Michael Jordan. Guaranteed, sign of the dotted line, it is going to happen because of executions and because of games and because of comebacks and because of championships and moments like last night. Again, LeBron did that without Kyrie and Kevin Love on the floor. He came back from down 25 points in the second half in a playoff game on the road and did it without his two best players on the floor because they realized, okay, well, as long as there's LeBron, if we just surround him with some shooters like Korver and Fry and Darren Williams, we'll get back into this bad boy. And before you knew it, the Pacers melted down. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Now, I'm not going to go crazy and say that that's one of the greatest playoff performances ever because of the opponent. I mean, they're playing a 7 seed in Indiana that clearly has its own issues. But it is still the postseason. It is still a 25-point comeback in the second half. It is still on the road. And if you're Paul George, you were great overall if you looked at the box score. If you watched the game, the fourth quarter was not good for Paul George. Paul George, unfortunately, A, doesn't have great talent around him in Indiana, but also B, isn't the type of guy like LeBron that can will his team to the next level. He's a great player, but he's not going to be a guy that says, I will drag you there. And the Pacers just became so, so lethargic. And they took it easy. They took their foot off the gas. They were just having fun. They don't know what this moment is like. They really don't. They don't understand what that postseason moment is like where you have to seize the opportunity. And if I'm Paul George, yeah, I want out of there. Now, again, I'm not totally absolving him of blame. But if you're Paul George and you're looking at this summer, you're going, get me out of here. This team's got no guts, no heart, can't close. I got to depend on Lance Stevenson? That's who I got to depend on? No, get me out. I think he will. I think he'll rattle cages. This is going to be an embarrassment. The Pacers are going to get swept, and they will have blown a 25-point second-half lead at home in Game 3 and would have had chances to win 1 and 2 had they executed better. I think he's going to want out. And as great as Larry Bird was as a player, pretty mediocre as an executive. Because the surrounding cast around Paul George is not very impressive. And Nate McMillan, absolutely not all that impressive. I mean, dude, you just blew a 25-point lead at home of the playoffs, and what was his coaching? No, don't do that, LeBron. Please stop, LeBron. Would you take it easy on us, LeBron? That doesn't really help. When we return here on the DA show, last night got a whole big bunch of play from NFL fans and media. And I might be the only one on an island going, why is this interesting? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
I think that both Bilotti and Bogus have been great.
Excellent Trash Tuesdays. Trash Tuesday is a good way of finding out what somebody's made of.
Good litmus test.
Good litmus test, because if you're somebody who won't do Trash Tuesday, and I'm not going to name any more names because the names have been named before, and it's like, well, you don't have any issues in life. Nothing's eating at you, and you give us nothing. Quite frankly, I judge you on that, but if Bilotti and Bogus both brought something to Trash Tuesday, and now I think of them in higher regard. I think that was excellent for the team.
They've been very good.
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it, or listen at daoncbs.com and the show's Facebook page, Zaps.
Time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later on to the show to answer it. Sign up to be an O-Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O-Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. It's fast, free, and easy. Only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. So last night was the big NFL schedule unveil. Social media goes crazy.
I'm not on Twitter or Facebook right now.
Fans really dig it. Websites pick it up. And every year I just yawn. I just find it to be the most artificially hype thing. It's not a sporting event. It's not an achievement. It's nothing that's unpredictable. We know everybody's opponents already. This is just about when they play said opponents and what television station they're on. That's essentially what last night was. We know every opponent. We know home and road record or home and road slate. We know everything. We just don't know which Sunday they'll play them and what television station they're on. I think that this is just a modern, it's just a modern extension of the overhype that the NFL gets and this kind of irrational craze that surrounds even non-events. I'm like this with the scouting combine. I couldn't be more bored by the combine. Can't be more bored by guys in gym shorts doing Pilates and doing standing jumps and doing stupid stuff. Couldn't be more bored. And yet I realize there is clearly a market for this because, Mraz, you lap it up. Scout and combine, you're locked inside. Cheetos all over yourself. Can't get enough of the gymnastics. Can't get enough of the underwear gymnastics. Then last night, that's like your holiday.
I live for NFL schedule release day. It's one of the best days of the year, and I'm still jacked up reading through it.
Why?
Well, a couple reasons. Number one, if you're a guy like me, it's all about planning your trip. You want to see your favorite team on the road. You get together with your boys. All right, what date are we going to go to? You have a couple ideas going in. Can't make this work. We got a wedding this weekend. Okay, all right, this is the date. Let's book our flights. Let's start planning that. It's a big event. You want to see where you're going, when you're going.
If you go on a road trip. Not everybody does that.
I agree. And then you start looking at your home games. What games you want to go to this year? Oh, I think November 5th will work. Why don't we do that? And then also you start playing the game where we've already done free agency. We're about to hit the draft. You can play the win-loss game now. You can look at
the season. Oh, I hate the win-loss game.
You can absolutely play
it. Stop with the win-loss
game. It's all about
game.
When you play and where you play. Don't think as a Giant fan, I already haven't seen. The Cowboys are at Seattle and at Oakland two of the last 3 weeks. That's a murderer's row for them.
Oh, it's so pathetic.
It's a glorious night.
It's a win-win-loss. We're going to go 10-6. Everybody ends up at 10-6 or 11-5 when they do that win-loss stupid thing.
I got us at 13-3.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Oh, I just hate it. We don't do this with anybody else, nothing else, but when the schedule comes out, people think that they can predict exactly what the wins and losses will be, even though every single year we have half the playoff teams that fall out of the playoffs and half the non-playoff teams make the playoffs, and yet somehow it becomes predictable. Well, no, I think this is the win, this is the loss. Like, you know what's going to happen in week 15 in Philadelphia. I mean, come on.
You never know.
I just find this so artificially stupid. This is the sports equivalent of the damn Starbucks unicorn frappuccino. It is just calories and sugar and no nutritional value, and people are into it because they think they should be into it. But there's a couple of matchups I kind of like. Let me say, there's a couple of things that stood out to me. Number one, you guys know, if you don't know by now because you've only been listening to this show this week when we switch time slots, I am beside myself angry that the Raiders are leaving Oakland. I didn't even grow up a Raiders fan, didn't grow up in Oakland or the Bay Area, didn't grow up in Los Angeles. I am just beside myself that the NFL, in all of its infinite wisdom, is going to move one of the classic traditional franchises, one of the best fan bases in all of America, one of the best brands in all of sports, and move it to the middle of the desert with complete question marks and tear it away from the community that it built up. I'm so sick to my stomach over this. But more than that, well, on that point, they get the Patriots at home. Really cool, right? Patriots in Oakland, Oakland home game, week 11. This could be big. Playoff ramifications on the line. Maybe even like last year, this would decide home field advantage through the AFC. They freaking gave this game to Mexico City. This is the Mexico City Raider home game. You can't even do a solid to the Raiders fans after you stole their team? You took their team out from under them. They get the Patriots at home in Oakland, one of the final 2 years there, and you give that game to Mexico City. Is anybody else sick to their stomach, nauseous, needing to vomit because of how greedy and how insensitive the NFL is? It's outrageous. You can't even give the Raider fan the Patriots game. Let that be the Chargers game. Let it be any game except the Raiders and Patriots. I'm so aggravated by this. Like, the NFL just broke up with a girlfriend and then decided, I'm going to actually go over to that girlfriend's house. I know she's crying, and show up with my new girlfriend. And on top of it, I'm going to egg her house. And I'm going to start prank calling her and harass her on social media. Like, that's how scummy this move is by the NFL. It's the Patriots game in Mexico City. Oh, screw off, NFL. Number two. Speaking of Oakland, I do at least feel good that we get Cowboys at Raiders week 15, I think it is, on Sunday Night Football, December 17th. That I'm very fired up about. Two franchises, huge, huge brands, huge, huge expectations for both, really good young quarterbacks. I love that matchup on Sunday Night Football. At least Raider fan gets the Cowboys at home on Sunday Night Football. Okay. I also, because when it comes to traditional franchises, outdoors, grass, late in the season, that's where I get all juiced up. Week 12, Packers at Steelers at Heinz Field. Now, that will be a Fox game, I assume. So that'll probably be the 4:05 or 4:15, whatever they have that late window, Packers at Steelers. Two teams.
No, that's Sunday Night Football.
Oh, that's Sunday Night Football as well? Okay.
Thanksgiving weekend.
That should be amazing. At night, on grass, in Pittsburgh, Packers Steelers, two former dynasties. I love it. The only question will be, if there's a drunk Steeler fan that comes up to Aaron Rodgers in a bar, will he tell him, get away from me, buddy? Take the Giants games out of this, Mraz. Is there a national game that you're really amped up about?
Not necessarily a game, but I like something the NFL did in weeks 15 and 16. Instead of just being corporate hogs and going with one Saturday night game, we have a doubleheader each of those weeks on Saturday at 4:30 and at night, which is something they used to do years ago, and now not just to do it 1 week, but 2 weeks.
So
I love that.
Week 15 and 16?
Week 15 and 16.
We get two Saturday games.
We get a 4:30 Eastern and an 8 o'clock Eastern in back-to-back weeks, which I think is awesome.
So that's after college football.
After college football. But two Saturdays, keep the Saturday football drinking going after college football.
Yeah, and eating for you. I mean, that's kind of a bad situation because you will eat all night Thursday night now that we're off the air, and you can watch Thursday night football in your underwear.
And Monday night football.
But so Thursday night starts off your weekend of grotesque overeating. And then Saturday will give you a two-game window NFL-wise. Then all day Sunday and a Sunday night and a Monday night. All of this when you're out of the studio and at home on the couch.
Well, and I don't want to pile on, but I believe you're now going to be in the Friday afternoon Pizza Friday window.
Oh, right.
So there's a
Pizza Friday window here at the studios.
There's a lot of windows here that I'm not going to be able to fit through in a couple of weeks.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. You could always connect with us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. When we return, let's put into some historical context what LeBron of the Cavaliers pulled off last night with a guy that knows that team and that guy better than anybody, Brian Windhorst. That's coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Muffins, Mornings, Mothership.
I've been listening to your show for the last 4 years. I just want to say for you, Mraz, and your whole team, congratulations on you coming up to 9 a.m.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a reminder that if your affiliate doesn't have us for any reason or you're outside of your normal listening area, it's all good. You can always stream us go to the CBS Sports app, the TuneIn app, the radio.com app, or Apple Music, or just go to our website, daoncbs.com, and click on Listen Live. Also, if you're watching the web stream right now, you see me holding up a book. It's Return of the King, LeBron James, the Cavaliers, the greatest comeback in NBA history. It's written by two longtime NBA journalists. They have both covered the Cavaliers and the rest of the NBA. Right now for ESPN, Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin. They both join us here on the show. Guys, good morning. Brian, how are you? Dave, how are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm doing great, Damon.
Thanks so much for joining us. Last night, it's a great time to have you guys on because last night LeBron James has another epic performance. Brian, let me ask you about last night's performance. Is that a moment where LeBron flips a switch and kind of goes into that next layer, or is that more of a Pacers collapse and he just takes advantage?
Both. Whenever you see some sort of a switch in a score like that, it's going to be both teams contributing. The Pacers played really out of their minds in the first half, hit everything, everything went their way. And in the second half, they missed a lot of open shots. They really tightened up. As you see occasionally when a team makes a comeback on another team, they really contributed. But over LeBron's career, there's been, you know, a dozen or so times where he's been able to take an awkward lineup and lead them. One last night was a real reminder. Early in his Heat career, he had a game at Utah where they were down by a similar, imagine, 20, 25 points. And Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade didn't play in the fourth quarter. And there was some sort of patchwork lineup that he put together. And he led, playing almost the exact same style, a crazy comeback like last night where Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving didn't play in the fourth quarter. That unit that played together for the Cavs in that comeback had only played together for 9 minutes the entire season and not at all in this playoff series. So that's definitely something LeBron has within his capability of doing, finding a lineup where he can figure out how to make things work. But I don't think you should think it's something that they're going to do regularly in the postseason.
It's that yin and yang of this year's Cavaliers team. Last night they complete the biggest playoff comeback ever, but they also choked away the biggest fourth quarter lead ever just a couple of weeks ago against Atlanta. So Dave, how would you grade out how this title defense is going for the Cavaliers and what to possibly expect? It feels like there's such dramatic swings both ways.
Well, I guess you could say one of those games mattered and one of them didn't. And, you know, the Atlanta collapse, they had the 26-point lead in the fourth quarter. That was trying to get the number one seed, and people were wringing their hands over, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they lost that to the Boston Celtics. This shows that this team has flaws. Boston Celtics are down 2-0 right now. And so, you know, most likely the Cavs will not be facing the Celtics down the line. And so they are the number one team in the Eastern Conference moving forward. I think the real lesson to take out of last night is, one, the genuine reaction that Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving had in that fourth quarter, cheering on their teammates, is a great sign for this team moving forward. It says that they do have the camaraderie and the care for one another that they seem to be lacking. And beyond that, they needed some of those guys to get going. Kyle Korver only had 5 total shots in games 1 and 2. He had been such a vital part of their team when they looked so good in January. In February. So that was big. Deron Williams scoring 5 points. He hadn't scored 5 points in a game that mattered basically since he joined the Cavs. So that was big. And then, of course, Channing Frye continued a pretty strong series that he's having. They're not going to win just with the big three. Especially if they get to the biggest stage, they get to the NBA Finals. The reason the Warriors are so good is they have guys like Iguodala and Sean Livingston, JaVale McGee that come at you in waves. They need to get their bench going and their defense going over the next couple rounds if they have a chance in the NBA Finals. You know, of course, we don't know who they'll face, but, you know, if the Warriors team would be formidable. And there are a lot of good things that portend to them getting to the right level as the playoffs move forward.
Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin joins us here on the show as we discuss last night's Cavaliers win and the Cavaliers overall. Dave just brought up an interesting point about chemistry, and Brian, I want to ask you this question. What you guys have delved into in the book is the backstory of LeBron coming to the Cavaliers and then en route to that championship last year, and part of that was a lack of chemistry. Year one, year two, social media bickering, backstabbing. Brian, how bad was it behind the scenes in terms of trying to get guys on the same page?
Well, I think it was frustrating for guys. You know, one thing you have to remember, Kyrie Irving did not sign up to play with LeBron. He thought he was signing a contract extension for an offense that was completely built around him with a new coach that was dedicated to forming the team around him. That was on July 1st, 2014. He was very excited. On July 10th, all of a sudden LeBron arrived and his world changed. He didn't agree to that. You know, Kevin Love, when he forced a trade into Cleveland, he was ready to sign up for it. So it took some adjustment from Kyrie. He had to, his whole world changed, and he's been very complimentary of LeBron throughout the time, but it took them a while to learn how to play together, and it was rough at the beginning. But I actually think they got traction together a lot quicker than LeBron and Kevin Love did, because Kevin is sort of an introvert at times. It takes a while to get to know him, and LeBron's style of leadership can be frustrating. LeBron can be passive-aggressive, as we saw over the last few years, with sometimes how he would tweet about Kevin indirectly or indirectly. However, I think Kevin and Kyrie would tell you, as would almost all of LeBron's teammates over his career, that while there may be a day or a week where he can be frustrating, the benefit that he brings, both in terms of winning and in terms of financial enrichment, LeBron truly floats all boats upward when he comes in, is the best bargain they could ever make as a professional basketball player.
So LeBron's not always easy to get along with, as are most superstars, and I don't feel like Dan Gilbert must be very easy to get along with either. We all know the dopey Comic Sans serif letter that he sent out after LeBron left. Let me ask you, Dave, where's their relationship at right now? Did LeBron and him get together? Are they okay?
It's an arranged marriage, Damon, and they both had the mutual goal of winning, bringing a championship to Northeast Ohio. Dan Gilbert wanting to replicate the success of the Detroit Pistons, team that he grew up cheering for as a Detroit native, and LeBron hoping to finally break that curse. And you know, which he was able to accomplish. Now, the remarkable thing about this is that when they initially started to see if they could cross that bridge again that had seemingly been blown torched by the decision and Dan Gilbert's reaction to it, that was one of the first steps that had to be taken care of, was can Dan and LeBron work together? And it's detailed in the book where Dan Gilbert's told, you're going to come down to Florida, we're going to meet in an undisclosed location, and come alone. And you can't bring your cap guy. Dan wanted to bring his cap guy to go through the numbers and impress LeBron with what they have going on, or bring some other trusted people for the presentation to try to woo him as a free agent in the summer of 2014. And it was LeBron's people and then Dan Gilbert sitting across from one another. And they spent, you know, maybe 15 minutes, both of them apologizing and clearing the air for what went down when LeBron left. And then, you know, the rest of that three-hour meeting was getting down to the nitty-gritty and seeing, can this actually work? Can we actually put together a championship team if LeBron comes back to Cleveland? And clearly that's happened, and they're still in championship contention as they move forward.
Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin join us here on the show, authors of the book Return of the King, LeBron's Return to Cleveland and Their Championship Comeback Last Year. So LeBron feels like now he approaches his career as more than basketball. We had the story last week about him sponsoring a public school in Cleveland and all of these kind of community things that he ends up doing. Brian, was his return to Cleveland about specifically winning a championship as the priority and then whatever else happens? Or was it more about becoming more of kind of a cultural and regional icon and changing the landscape from a non-sports standpoint that motivated LeBron to return most?
He definitely felt when he was having discussions with his closest friends about whether or not he was ready to make this jump, they discussed legacy directly. They termed that this was the word that they used in talking to us was, we saw this as a legacy play, a play to affect LeBron's legacy. He had won championships and MVPs, but he needed to make a move for his legacy. I also think that it helped that the Cavs were a young team with the potential, with a star player in Kyrie Irving, with the potential to add more stars. That made it more sense for him to go in 2014 as opposed to maybe 2015 or 2016. So part of it was a basketball-based decision, but definitely legacy was at the front of his mind. And he has said on many occasions that he did not come back to the Cavs because of a single player or a single coach or because of the owner. He came back to the Cavs because he wanted to come home and win a championship. It helped that they were fertile. They were ready to go. They were ready to build up quickly. But I do think that, establishing a legacy was important. And that's why that championship last year, I mean, championships have been described to me like children. None is more is more important than the next. But I have to believe for LeBron, that title last year is the greatest accomplishment of his career.
I would have to agree. And so I wonder, when it comes to LeBron, who's always pushing himself, you guys have been around him and know him personally for a long time. So you've seen his evolution as a human being, as a player. Dave, would you say after the championship last year, he's now more at peace with himself, his legacy, and his career?
To me, he's the same guy. So if there is a basketball ghost that he's chasing, that's what he terms. So he still says that he is chasing the ghost of Michael Jordan. That means that he has more work to do because he wants to walk away from the game known as the greatest person ever to participate in it. And I think if you watched last night, it's a glaring example of when he, gets himself into that mode, that is like his nirvana. That's his bliss. That is his masterpiece. I mean, last night, 14 years in, first-round playoff game, myself and Jason Lloyd, who's covered LeBron for a long time in Cleveland, we walked away saying, that's a top-five performance he ever put up in the playoffs. He's still doing it. He's still giving his all to both his body and his training, and he loves the game. And so, I don't know if there's a peace factor to it. I think it's a full immersion factor. And there's nothing he'd rather be doing at this stage of his life.
Brian, we'll wrap up with that question to you. Do you feel like LeBron changed at all since June of last year?
I don't. I think he has just as much of a desire to win. And last night was, LeBron enjoys winning with teammates so much. The way that game would play out, where he was sort of able to be the ringmaster. Yeah, he scored a lot of points, but he was feeding his teammates. He was feeding Kyle Korver and Channing Frye and Deron Williams. He was setting all of them up. He loves playing that way. He loves having star players with him too to share the burden. But the way that game played out was, you could just tell on his face the satisfaction that he got. That's the way he was raised in the game. He was obviously always the most talented player on every team, but he loved bringing his teammates along with him. And so last night is the reason that he still has so much energy for those types of moments where he can win as a team. And as Dave will tell you, he was not gloating. He was so tired last night. I don't think he had any time, but he really just took it as it's another step in the process. And that's how his attitude has been for a long time now.
The book is titled Return of the King, LeBron James, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the greatest comeback in NBA history. It's available all places books are available. It just was recently released. It's a very, very cool work. It's co-authored by Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin, who have covered the NBA and LeBron of the Cavaliers for a long, long time for ESPN right now. So check them out there. Guys, it was great to catch up this morning. Thanks so much for the context on LeBron.
Thank you.
Brian Windhorst and Dave McMenamin joining us here on the show after last night's performance. How about that? Guys that have covered basically every step. I mean, Windhorst was with LeBron with the Akron Beacon Journal and then the Cleveland Plain Dealer and obviously with ESPN for the Heat and now the Cavaliers. And those guys saying that's a top five LeBron performance ever last night. That's That's pretty good company. I mean, when I think about his greatest moments ever, Game 7 last year, NBA Finals, the block and everything that came with that has got to be in that conversation. That game, I think it was a Game 5 or a Game 6 in Detroit in 07 when he takes out what was then the powerhouse of the Eastern Conference, the Pistons, and he scores something like 22 of the Cavaliers' final 23 points and 21 straight or something like that. When he comes back, I think there was a Game 5, then they wrapped up in Cleveland into Game 6. Look, he had a monster triple-double when they clinched the championship over the Spurs in that Game 7 a couple of years ago for their second title in Miami. And last night is in the conversation. It's in the pantheon. 41-13-12 to cap the greatest playoff comeback in NBA history. 25 points. Pretty amazing. 855-212-4CBS. When we come back, the flip side of the NBA equation from last night is the Raptors are a disaster. We'll get to that coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.